Bienvenue, ici Matt Track, vous écoutez CKUT 90,3 FM.
International de Nuit d'Afrique, presented by TD Bank, invites you to their 35th anniversary this summer. Join us for this world music event, a 13-day celebration from July 6th to the 18th. This innovative edition takes place in venues, outdoors, and online, a fusion of past and present, rich in history and in new musical discoveries. Discover the surprises. For more information and tickets, go to festivalnuitdafrique.com.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yes, it's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm in studios with
Renee Jordan. And this evening, we're going to be talking to Kofi Oduro Ilispricha, who is a creative coder, an experience enhancer who merges an array of media to provide unique experiences that promotes, discusses, reflects, and interacts with the general public. With 10 years of experience in performance, event productions, audiovisual outputs, he takes inspiration from creative endeavors that are not normally seen together to create a harmonic experience for audiences and users alike. Kofi, welcome.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you for having me. This is like the first interview post-curfew, so it would be good.
Yes, it is. Kofi, the reason why I wanted to get you in on the show a little bit is because I had seen some of the work that you've been doing during this quarantine time, and some of the work that you've been doing in a not so, well, in a more unusual way. Kofi is a creative coder. And normally you see people use code to create websites, to create programs, and not really to do something in the creative entertainment space. So for the people, just explain a little bit about what it is that you do.
Okay. So I do creative coding, but I do more. more of a subset called live coding. Mm-hmm. So live coding is similar to improv. So I have, I also done spoken word. So think of it like freestyle poetry or, you know, freestyle beatboxing, freestyle dancing. But instead of having it through like your bodily movements or what's your mind, I'm interacting with a computer in such way. So a lot of these languages is that as soon as I make a change, I can update them in real time. And I do this in musical formats. So some languages I do make songs, make music compositions. And then in others, I will do like animation, collage, remixes, and even dabble in some like obscure things that do like poetry or interactions.
Okay. And prior to COVID, this is typically done in a space with people.
Yes, it has been done in spaces with people. Like some events, they call them agoraves. So it's like a pun on like raves, you know, algorithmic raves where you have like algorithms controlling the rave. I will do it. I have done like stuff like in like galleries, or I think maybe we might even talk about it later. There was one event where I did it in like a former slave prison in Ghana, like had an interactive piece. So that wasn't live coding, but it had creative coding elements. But due to COVID, I've been doing a lot in my house or around my where I can get Wi-Fi, you know, no interaction. So that has been different. Because when you're performing live, you know, you get the cheers, you hear the stumble, you know, when it's silence, someone might burp, someone might laugh, or someone baby's just crying. And that was like one of the best parts. Hearing like someone do something often and then putting it in my work. But online, sometimes people just mute their mic. Sometimes people will ask you random questions. So it's a different challenge. And also the computers. Because early COVID, I had issues sometimes because I had a different computer and setup where sometimes my computer would freeze midway. So, yeah.
So when you were performing in live spaces, could you tell us about some of the places that your live space performances took you to around the world?
Let's see. So it started. So, of course, Montreal, had the pleasure of performing, doing some performances up north. Like part of a workshop, like, you know, Shibugamu Matagami. That was within collaboration with like organization Jenny Lab. There's been Hamilton.
What is Jenny Lab?
Jenny Lab is an organization that does a lot of like, they try to like break the barrier of technology by bringing in creative stuff. So they do a lot of creative tech workshops. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I work with them because I do freelancing for them at times. So that was like, there was Shibugamu Matagami. There's been Hamilton. There was Ghana for the Chale Wolte Festival, which is the largest street festival in West Africa. And what was cool about that, I actually met the mayor of Accra, which is the capital of Ghana. So that was really cool. And then got to be on radio as well. So that was nice. Been to
And Paris. your background is from there, correct?
Yes. So that was like, so yeah, I was going to say like I've been to Paris and also Madrid, but the Ghana Accra was very special to me. Because it was a homecoming in a way, because I haven't been to Ghana since I was like, what, 5 years old? So like 25 years ago. So coming in, seeing family members, seeing people that I haven't seen as a kid because they move out to England and all that, and being able to give back, you know, like, because even though it was a vacation, I was doing a lot of workshops. So I gave a workshop like an all-girls boarding school. I was able to like show people like you could do creative coding because a lot of them are. I remember there's one DJ I will never forget. He's like, I want to learn coding so I can be like one of the top DJs in Ghana. And like funny enough, like now on Twitter or something, he's like, and on IG, he's verified. So that day I'm like, yo, you actually did your thing. You said you're going to be the best and you're actually winning awards. He's like, but I don't remember you. I'm like, well, maybe you might remember, but a couple years ago I did this coding thing. He's like, yes, I remember you, computer guy.
So you inspired him to take on this new genre, I guess, of or this new area of work in terms of DJing? Does he incorporate code in his DJ work?
I don't think it was the code per se that inspired him, but more of the inspiration. So it's likened to, there's this anime called Space Brothers.
Okay.
And they talk about why people go to space. And it's like one of my favorite quotes. And it's like, the reason why we go to space is that we're adding another dimension to our knowledge base. So he used that if you're a one-dimensional ant, mm-hmm. if you hit a rock, mm-hmm. you're going to keep walking into the rock because you can't go around it. If you're a two-dimensional ant, what do? You see the rock and you turn left, right. Now, a two-dimensional creature, if he doesn't have the presence or she have the presence of 3D, when they see a cliff, they're not going to climb it. But if you know 3D, you're going to climb it. So it's one of those inspirations that I think is just adds that extra dimension of, oh, if we can do that, then maybe we can do this, or maybe we can do that. And that has been something that has resonated even with myself. Like, the more I see people do stuff, I'm like, oh, I can mimic this, or I can remix it. So I think that was more, I don't think it was coding per se, but the idea that music can be seen in a different fashion.
Right. Okay. So basically, it's as if it's figuring out an alternative way of seeing an obstacle and overcoming the obstacle. So instead of turning left or right or just standing still, there's another way to go over it.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's like similar to, like, let's say hip hop rap, right? Like, how many sampling. It's very interesting because sampling, you're reusing something that influenced you or that you're moved by in such a different way. At times, sometimes people swaggerjack and don't give credit. But, you know, how many samples have, like, I remember listening to these verses from the 80s or 90s. I'm like, damn, I didn't know the original song, but I heard 6 songs that use your song. So it's like, I think the same thing, like, how does the human mind interact? How does it gauge?
It's like how a lot of Lauryn Hill songs and old school, like, Fuji songs and other artists as well. We hear the new sampling, like, new songs from all kinds of the new artists, Cardi B, Lil Nas X, and so on. And we're hearing these samples, and we're like about to break out into a certain song, and then it's like completely different track. And then we go back and we find out that, oh, this was actually sampled from a song from the 70s, and that sample was from a song from the 40s, and that sample was from a song from the 20s. So yeah, sampling is a thing that is prevalent in music in general, but then hip hop is a huge sampler.
Yeah, huge. But I think some people don't like it, but I think, I don't know, I don't think anything is really original, but it is original. That makes sense. Like, I feel like creativity is a mix of, like, taking something and then trying to make it as your own, that journey of making it as your own. So
yeah, it's just like a car is not original, but the way that you present the car is original. So like, now you have, before you, everything was a gas car, now you have electric cars coming out, and you have the Tesla and so on and so forth. It's just an evolution of what's already there.
Speaking of music and speaking of arrangements, remixing is something that you like to do a lot, isn't it?
Yes, well, because the thing is that I don't have no music. I cannot play an instrument. I can do poetry, so that means I technically can rap, but I cannot sing for sure. But, like, when you tell me, like, when I see those numbers, I'm like, okay, let me play around with the numbers. So that's the thing. It's like I'm remixing numbers. Because music is just applied physics, and like
you're gonna have to explain that, because I'm sure you've just confused someone at home, thinking music is applied physics.
Well, like, so I guess I'm gonna go with the more direct, and then we're gonna go into indirect. Mm-hmm. If you ever see sheet music, quarter, eighth note, this and that. If you do dance, 8-beat, right? And then in a lot of, like, electronic music and all that, sometimes there's this thing that, like, one math guy realized. It's called Euclidean rhythms. So every culture has its own beat style, right? So, like, hold up. Last time I did this, I screwed up the beat. So, like, you know, like, if it's 2/4, it would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But if you want, like, if you're trying to go for, like, let's say, like, Afro-Caribbean rhythms tend to be more paced. So it would be, like, they would be, like, 5/12. So it would be, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like, right? And then you go. But if you think about it, that rhythm is just a bunch of on and offs. And then the more I dabbled into that, I'm like, some cultures speak faster than others, and sometimes it matches the music. So, maybe sometimes, like, in the Afro-Caribbean diaspora, maybe sometimes we speak loud because our music goes, like, in such a loud, has such a loud rhythm and loud pace that we have to, like, speak over it.
Could be. And you have used this this knowledge of music and this knowledge in your latest release of an album, haven't
yes.
you?
Yes, I have. So in the album Colorscape, every track is a color. And within that color, I use numbers because, you know, colors have a bunch of variables. And I only use the numbers found in that color to make its own track. So if we were, I guess the human representation will be like, I am Kofi. My parents are Ghanaian and I'm in Canada. So I use variables. So it would be like, okay, Ghana has this and that, and I'm going to use those sounds to make it. So it's like an internal monologue of the color. So I try to, like, give all these nine colors a personality based on stuff that is found within. And it plays on that whole culture of, like, we're all remixes, technically. Like, as species, we are a remix, right? Because, right. like, we're, like, our grandparents, we have great-grandparents, we take a bit of their DNA, then we have, like, if they move to another island, then we take what they ate, you are what you eat. So sort of playing on that, like, if colors have this breakdown, how would it sound if we're going in? But then I found out that sound and music are different. Like, it came very apparent because some numbers do not play. Like, the color black is actually a very interesting color because its variables are 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. Yeah. So with that one, any number can become 1 + 1 + 1 + 1. So for that one, I used any number I found that I chose. But some numbers, I had to do, like, math, like, okay, 3.7 minus 1.47 divided by 2.2 is 2. Like, I had to, like, come close. And some numbers, no matter what I did, will come close. So I was just playing with the numbers, so... It was interesting. Like, I like how it sounded, but it was really different than first going in. Because I was joking when I said it at first. And I'm like, okay, since I said it out loud, I have to do it. And I thought it was going to be easy. And then I actually looked at some of these numbers, and I'm like, some of these numbers are coming from, like, a place that I did not know. Like, what do you do with 0.004? I'm like, that ain't going to do nothing. So I had to, like, be creative on how I assimilated it. And it came out.
So how do you actually link the numbers to the beat that is playing or to the music that you hear?
Okay, so for that one, first of all, I played with BPM. So, you know, beats per minute. So I'm like, okay, everything is going to be, like, if I want a slow BPM, 67. So that one, I try to go between, like, 40 or 180. So it either goes very fast or very slow. And then the occluding rhythm, I'm like, okay, let's say I want to give this, like, that, like, maybe, like, let me choose a random place, maybe, like, West Asian. So I look, so I'm like, okay, if it's 4/7, what is the number 4/7? And this is where I come in, like, from a math background or, like, you know, coding goes in, because sometimes 4.1 divided by 2 won't give me the number. But then I could use stuff like modulo, which is, like, the division reminder, or sometimes, I don't know if I use exponents, but I might have used, like, exponents once, or the concept of, like, square to get the point. And then after,
so this is, like, Colorscape / Mathscape, it seems.
Like, it's like math by, you know, colored by numbers? It's like math by numbers. And I just wanted something that, like, would work.
And in the end, you ended up with an album of richly sounds that sounds all instrumental, but it has vibes of dance music, electronic music, Afro beats in there, and the whole gamut based on the colors and numbers that you come up with.
Yes, and also in the language I use, there's also a lot of, like, I can use my own samples, but there's also a lot of, like, samples that are within it. So I mix the numbers with the sampling. Mm-hmm. And then I think that comes from, like, being embedded in, like, a lot of hip-hop culture, where it's like, okay, we're going to take this beat, you know, flip that beat or flip the lyrics or one of those things. And then I think that the instrumental nature of it was really because it's, like, that nature of, like, you know, the cipher. Because whenever I do a live performance, I always think about the cipher where, like, no matter how crazy the beat is, if you're in that circle, you still got to spit, right? Like if the if someone's playing a country track, you still got to spit your bars. You cannot say like, yo, I cannot spit on that beat. Because if you don't do it, someone's going to take that challenge. So it's one of those challenges that like, if you play an instrumental, how many different ways can you flip that?
Okay. And this project was sort of a spinoff from another project that you were working on. Something that I think is very, very different that we've come to see in, as a part of coming out of COVID or dealing with COVID times, having that whole art gallery experience move to a virtual experience. So we're going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and then we'll come back in and you can tell us a little bit about that virtual experience of an art gallery.
Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Yes, 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 it's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm in studios with
Renee Jordan, and we're talking with Kofi Oduro, who is a creative coder and experience enhancer. Kofi, before the break, we were talking about the virtual art gallery that was put together during these times. We're not actually allowed to gather together. Many of the museums have been closed for some time, but they have found a way to create sort of a virtual walkthrough, and your work was a part of this. Can you tell us about it?
Oh yeah. Oh, it was one of my better experiences with virtual galleries, because throughout the COVID, there's so many different platforms, and I have used a lot of these platforms. Like, some of them would be like, some people said it's too rich, some of that. So shout out to Special Esk, because he was able to make an experience that is reusable. Because that's one thing that when people ask me, what is the difference between in-person? Like you asked before, in-person, you can like have that reusability, right? You know, you want to keep going to concerts. You want to keep going seeing musicians. But online, how many times have someone said, oh, that's another Zoom call. I don't know if I want to go. I don't know if I want to go on IG Live because, yo, the internet sucks, you know? Like, you remember how early, I don't know if both of you watched the Versus, but you remember how in the Versus there was, like, so much bad internet that, like, after a while they just had to, like, try to get people into one venue? So that's the problem with the virtual space. And that's why I think it was cool that he coded one that took a lot of the pieces of the artist and played with scale and depth,
mm-hmm.
that is replayable and that is easy to use, easy to understand, and you can have a lot of exploration. And for that, he's like, can you just make a track? And I'm like, I guess so. But I wanted to challenge myself because I'm like, okay, and the whole color presence, I'm like, let me just remix the colors. And then it came together in such a unique way. And the whole like premise of that gallery was about the remix culture and how like in a lot of like in the Afro-Caribbean lifestyle, in the diaspora and all that, everything, a lot of what we do is remixing, right? When it comes to food, remix. When it comes to this, that, like think about like what we did like in Montreal, right? Someone made a jerk chicken poutine, right? And then like, you know, we go that, and that one time I was watching Guy's Grocery Games, they made a poutine out of plantain. So no fries, they made like plantain poutine.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, that was actually really nice. I never tried it, but I have to, like, I always tell myself I want to try it. You know, and that's in our cultures, it's like to adapt and all that stuff, like, you know, musicals. So it was very interesting to be like, and like-minded individuals where we played with that concept of Afrofuturism,
mm-hmm.
from so many different spectrums. Even though I do think the term Afrofuturism might be slightly overused, slightly maybe, because you hear it everywhere. Like, it comes to point, I don't even know what Afrofuturism, like, really is, which I think is good and bad, because I think that's part of our culture, right? Like, what is this? What is that? So,
well, how would you describe your work as a part of that exposition?
Since I did it through code, and code is his own language, and I do a lot of remixes, I think it just brought a different scope to the project, right? Because, you know, when you think of collage, you usually think of paper. So I think my work helped that exploration or that demonstration of how you can link the past to the future without losing yourself. And that was the whole point of that space, right? Because
mm-hmm.
when you think about that gallery, you can almost say it was like FUBU, right? For us, by us, where all the artists were black, all the spaces were black, the sounds were black, like it's black ideas being showcased. And it has that feeling like where when you can be unapologetic and you see that representation through many different art forms, right? People were performing, people were creating. So I feel like the best thing about that gallery was that you saw so many people in different art forms, right? It wasn't just dance, it wasn't just hip hop, it wasn't just this or that. It was, you had a black curator, you had the person in charge of the curation was also black, so you had like so much different levels. And I think I also liked it because it was also outside of Black History Month, so it was just an expansion. If it was during Black History Month, I just think it would be like, I don't want to say cluttered, but I like when our experiences are told outside the month. Like, I'm not taking anything away from Black History Month, but I do like it when we do see connections or bond beyond that month, because you know what they say, right? Black history is 365.25 days, because you know, leap year, so you've got to count.
You would year. Put in that 0.25.
Well, it is like the world is 360. I was going to say 366, but like you might get complaints that I'm saying fake news on like by the CRTC, so I have to be precise.
Just on the Afrofuturism point, Itisha Elowomak, who is the writer of Afrofuturism, that's a book, defines it as an intersection of imagination, technology, the future, and liberation. It is a philosophy of science fiction and history that traverses across the African diaspora through culture with technology. So I think that your work fits Afrofuturism, because I think people get confused with futurism meaning only the future, but it's not only the future. It's a more sci-fi way of looking at us as a people, through our technology, through our culture, through our art. That's why you have books by Olivia E. Butler, I believe, Kindred, which is a very Afrofuturistic book. If people haven't read it, please go out and read it. It has to do with time travel. It has to do with connecting with your ancestors. It has to do with connecting with slavery and how time travel will affect that, and how experiencing that as a quote unquote modern person, the main character who keeps going back and forth in time, how that affects her experience today. And so that book, though it was written many, many years ago, before the term Afrofuturism gained prominence, it's still considered a piece of Afrofuturistic work. You know,
I never knew that. That was interesting, because like you're in that, and that's actually the funny part. So also part of that thing, there's like, I'm going to shout out this book because it's really nice art and really nice. It's called Cosmic Underground Northside. So it's like Black speculative Afrofuturism from Black Canadians, which I think is another subset that like is often forgetting, because you know, usually when we think of that, we think of like America, Caribbeans, Africa, you know, but sometimes people forget there's Black people in Canada at times. So it's very cool for that. And what you just said is actually interesting, because the more I talk about it, like people that like know that description, because I've heard that once, it's almost like it's arguable, or it's actually very apparent that, oh, you can consider that everything I do, since it has like that renaissance or like that thinking of the past, the future, and the present, that almost everything I do can be considered Afrofuturism. Because I do play on that, right? Like that whole remix and the color thing, due to the nature of why I did that, talking about DNA and looking within the past, you can argue that I'm like doing a time travel, because like, who gave the color that value? Whatnot. So you are right. In that sense, like, I'm thinking, I'm like, maybe I should add that, like, I'm an Afrofuturism. Like, maybe that's my overall theme. Because I'm coming to grasp that, like, a lot of what I do can be considered sci-fi.
Yeah. And what's also like important is that Afrofuturism is really about African American work. So people from the diaspora who have come, you know, whose ancestors came from the Middle Passage and so on, and who have that lived experience of being either descendants of slaves or survivors of racism and stuff like that, because we think about Nnedi Okorafor, who is a writer who writes with like a futuristic view. She doesn't consider her work to be Afrofuturism. She considers it to be, and I hope I'm not misquoting her, but she considers it to be African futurism, because she's writing specifically with an African experience. Like I'm rereading one of her books for like the third or the fourth time, and it's called Akata Warrior, and it's part of a two-part, I think soon to be a three-part series called the Akata series, and it's based in Nigeria, and essentially it is a young albino Nigerian American woman, girl, who figures out that she's a part of the Leopard Society, and the Leopard Society is the people who are capable of doing juju or magic. And so this is just talking about her experience, and it's very much rooted in science fiction, magic, and stuff like that. But Nnedi Okorafor considers her work to be African futurism and not Afrofuturism, which she's very adamant about making that difference. So that's something to consider as well, that Afrofuturism is really about the African-American experience, and then there are different subsets of Afrofuturisms as well.
Interesting. So going through your works as a part of that exhibit, what do people see if you were to describe what it is that you've exhibited?
In that piece? Mm-hmm. I guess for that one, it's universe building, because in that one, in my pieces and my performances, I treat them nowadays, I think I've been treating them nowadays for a while, as universes, that I'm not only performing, but I am on that universe. So I think that like speaks a lot to like how like there's a rich spiritual notion behind, like I'm from, like my parents are from Ghana, right? So Ghana, there's a lot of like things on like how Christianity is used, Islam, juju, and a lot of other factors, right? And then you have the sea, you have some places that are fishermen. One town has the highest boxing champions per capita in the world. So I think I'm playing on a lot of those factors. And like you were saying, Kim, like, I'm also playing around with, like, the Canadian aspect, right? Like, okay, I'm doing this and that. So I think it's just merging of worlds, but then being cognizant of the audience that they might have different worlds. So I try to build a world that everyone, when they entered, would have their own experiences. So that's why I think I like to play a lot with the senses. So, you know, color, sight, taste, mm-hmm. what you see, like, what you hear from the sounds, what even trying to play with touch in a way, if it's not like directly, indirectly with the words, so that everyone can play in this role how they play. So one example for that I like to say is that if I tell someone it's a snowy day, if you're from Montreal, a snowy day, you're probably thinking 30 centimeters minimum. If you're from New York, that might be 15, 20. And if you're in Texas, probably 3 centimeters of snow is a snowy day. And that's not a cap, really. I actually, when I was actually in Texas, like, they were freaking out for 1 inch, 3 inch, which is perfectly normal because they don't have the same tools that we have. So I want to play with that thing that when I say certain words, you can play along with it and how your mind is. That's why I tend to ask a lot of questions when I perform, because when I ask questions, since you don't have to answer them directly and you can answer in the head, in your head now, you have made your own future. You have made your own world. You have made your own interpretation of what I say. So I like, and I guess that really comes from, the more I think about it, you know when you're in, like, in high school and you're reading a book and it's just like, why did that person read blue? And then, like, people are coming with all these metaphors. Sometimes the person just said blue. Like, you know, sometimes we just say stuff. So I'm trying to play around, like, if you think it's that complicated, you're right. Like, if you ask me, like, what are some things mean, sometimes I actually have no meaning. It's really for you to interpret. And sometimes I take other people meaning, and if I like it, then that's what becomes part of the lore. And I think that also plays around with, like, oral traditions and all that, like, where if someone hears something, they can reimagine it. So back on the remix sampling and all that.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and get back to speaking to Kofi Oduro, Illest Preacher, about his creative coding experiences and experience enhancer experiences. So keep it locked. You're listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. It is another Tuesday evening, and you are still listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominic Ferguson. I'm in studios with...
Renee Jordan. And Kofi, we were talking a little bit about your exhibition that's a part of McMaster. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, the cut, and the remix.
Yes, the cut, the tear, and the remix, an all-black from the curator to all the pieces. It's an online exposition where it mimics the whole experience of going to the museum, going from room to room, and each one of the rooms is dedicated to an artist, and one of the rooms is dedicated to Kofi's work. In that room, you can find the walls, the color of Kente fabric. I think it's Kente fabric, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah. And actually, the story behind that, that's, like, accidental. Like, I didn't realize that till, like, my mom saw my work one day. It was like, oh, this looks like African patterns. And I think that was, like, the first time I'm like, damn.
Which is an interesting accident, given the fact that the poetry that's on the walls is speaking of your DNA.
Yeah, but that's Kemp's afterwards. So, So what happened is, like, originally, I remember I was just playing with Hydra, and then I saw these patterns, and they're cool. And then the more I look at these patterns, I'm like...
What is Hydra?
Hydra is, like, one of my life coding languages made by Olivia Jack, who's based out of Berlin, from California. Mm-hmm. She's very chill, and she created one of the languages that I used a lot. And when I was first learning the language, I'm like, oh, patterns are cool. I'll just play with different patterns, play with different shapes. Then the more I looked at it, I'm like, damn, these have, like, very strong, like, I guess West African pattern vibes. And then uh-huh. I'm like, maybe subconsciously. And then, like, so what happened is, I remember for a couple submissions, I wanted to write, like, coded poetry.
Okay.
So where, like, poetry that I write it in the format of code.
Uh-huh.
And then I submit all of this to Stilo, who's the wonderful Stilo Star, who's the wonderful curator of the project. And then she decided to remix my work. Like, I didn't even know about this. So she remixed the format of, like, my work, which is already remixed. You know, the remix of the remix. Shout out to Diddy. If you remember where he used to do remixes that were, like, far away from the original track.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know I'm going off a tangent, but, like, we have to be real. Like, I Need a Girl Part 1 and Part 2 are, like, really totally different tracks.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a remix. So it was one of those type of things where, like, you kept seeing this remix process. So I looked at it, I'm like, oh, wow, I never even thought of my work in, like, could be assembled that way where it layered, but it actually worked. Because, you know, you have the window tab that represents the code, but, you know, I'm also, like, bringing a window of, like, if you read the words of, like, my, like, DNA broken down, like, in a code from that, like, talks about someone that, like, I have strong African roots. The name, like, if you don't know, the name Kofi means born on Friday. But also, I'm someone that was born and raised in Canada. But also, I'm born and raised in Montreal. So if I go to Ontario, they think I'm Francophone. If I go in Montreal, it's like, why aren't you Francophone at times, right? Then I can go to Europe. It's like, oh, you're Canadian. You know, because if you don't have the Canadian back, they automatically assume you're American. Then I could go to Ghana, and they're like, what language do you speak? Why don't you like watch it? Why do you like Jollof more? Like, so these things, like, due to that mix, it's like, there's always an awareness that no matter where I go, and that's something that, like, I guess that's why, since it looks like Kente Cuff, is very interesting, because, you know, that's very, like, Ghanaian-like. So that, all that to say that those two things just happen to go together.
And So it was just a serendipity.
But is it really?
I don't know. Tell me.
I don't know.
Well, either way, it is quite the sight to take in. I don't quite remember the website, so if you can tell people where they can check that out if they are interested in seeing this virtual space to get that museum experience during a time where we can't really gather.
Let me get that for you, Ines.
Sure, no problem.
But while you're getting that, what I'm kind of fascinated with is you're kind of through the computer bringing new light to the way that quote-unquote traditional African designs are created. Because, you know, like there's all of these theories that but Africa is like the birth of civilization, and like technology was actually super, super advanced, at least in a very intricate way. And like to have basically your computer code kind of coincidentally, we'll say in quotation marks, recreating kente cloth is a very interesting thing, because then now, okay, were the ancestors seeing things in a kind of digital technology way? Were they specifically doing things based on like ones and zeros or numbers or you know, like it kind
geometry.
Of reexamines how things were being done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very good that you said that, because that is one thing that, because I did another project where I mixed coding and weaving, and I remember, oh, I forgot what's her name, it was on Twitter, and I went in. She did something called Knit.js, because weaving is actually code. Like, it has its own equations as math, right? Like, you go left, you go right, and then depending on how fast you go or what direction, you technically are physically coding. So there are some people, like, by ways of, I think it's called the Penelope Project, and I know one of them because one of the people is a live coder called Alex McLean. And I think this was part of the FOAM. I don't know what it stands for, but it's FOAM. Pretty sure that's like who commissioned it or part of it. And what they were looking at is that, how can you bring code in with like weaving and looming? Because you could argue that that was the original code.
Hmm.
Like you, and then you could, then if we're going in coding, every recipe is an algorithm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is, and then when you go from there, that's where you could like, cool, because you know how like, when you go for like most food that is not Western, no one really knows the exact recipe, but they have like, they start dashing stuff and something beautiful comes out.
Yeah.
Where is that, that algorithm, you know, people could be like, oh no, that algorithm is solely recipe, but it's not only recipe, that's the algorithm, right? When you're cooking, it's also the motions you take. That is also part of the algorithm, right? Like you can take two eggs, but depending on if you break it, if you whip it, how fast you whip it, how slow, you get in a different consistency, right?
Yeah.
Of the food. You could use, and think about it, how, like, think about rice. How many different ways do people make rice? So that means that there
ways
must
they make rice, yeah.
Yeah. So that means that, like, and if you look at a lot of diasporic wars, a lot of it sometimes down with like, yo, what's better, Haitian rice or Jamaican rice? Ghanaian jollof or Nigerian jollof? Even though that one we know the truth, but like, I'm not going to start a food war. And that's actually a very funny one, because the thing is that war, y'all both laughed, so y'all probably heard of it. That war goes deep, and the thing is that, like, so other people from outside are like, it can't be that different. Realistically, I'm not saying better or not, like if we're going, they're both good somewhat, I guess. It's going to hard for me to admit. But like, but reality, they are made differently though. They're,
yeah,
like, you can actually go on Wikipedia and there is a, like, it's the same food, but it's really made differently, right?
Yeah.
It's like fufu, I think some fufu you can make in cassava. Not all fufu is cassava, but
no.
If you go to the Caribbeans, y'all eat cassava too, right?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things like, okay, so maybe there's some like algorithm that you picked up as a kid or in as a culture to go in, right? So you know how like we say island time? So maybe it's due to like the temperature or the winds or the storms that people develop a certain attitude, right?
A certain rhythm of movement,
yes,
and timing.
Yeah.
What's interesting about what you're saying, again, tying it back to our history, is like if back in Africa, fufu was made with cassava, for example, that was not necessarily available readily when our people got to the Caribbean or got to the Americas. So they created their own version based on what ingredients were available there. Like, one could argue that... I'm trying to think of some kind of like sticky food, like certain dishes.
Anything with okra.
Yeah, certain dishes in the States, traditional dishes. You
yeah.
know. God.
Okra is one though, because I didn't even realize that I ate a lot of okra, like okra stew. Right,
yeah.
And like we have rice ball. I don't know if y'all have rice ball.
Rice ball, no. But
rice ball is like
things with okra though.
Yeah, it's like what you said, and that's the thing though. So it's like sometimes I look at it, it's like, you know, some stuff is like you're like it's natural progression, and sometimes like you just wanted something and you substitute, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing in like today's culture, right? Like avocado toast or cauliflower rice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe there was a dietary change. We don't know. Like, it's very interesting, right? Or the whole Kapora thing, and like, which might have similar roots to breakdancing. If you think about, like, you know, the movements, right? Like, well, maybe
breakdancing came from Capoeira, and Capoeira came from Angola.
Exactly.
You know, and Capoeira is more known for being Brazilian, but. And then people think of it as a capoeira as a dance, but it's actually a fighting style that originated in Angola. And it was a very dangerous fighting style as well, because the movements were really, really fast. And like, they had assassins who were capoeira fighters, you know, and all kinds of things. So like, when you go back in the history, you can always kind of trace it back to the original continent. But you know, they have to modify it when they get here, because either they're not allowed to practice it in the way that they used to. They have to do it in secret, or the ingredients are not the same. So instead of cassava, they have to use rice, because I saw a recipe of where someone made fufu out of rice, and I was very confused by that.
That's what we call rice ball or banku. So when I was telling you rice ball, it's like fufu, but you make it out of rice. And then there's banku that's like, I think also maybe cassava or flour. But yes, you're talking rice ball. Like, it, like in Ghana, some people make rice ball. So right. It's like sticky. So
you see, it's an evolution. It's an evolutionary process in terms of ingredients and availability and what people are allowed to do or say. Like, I mean, look at Caribbean language, you know, English is kind of universally spoken across most of the Caribbean islands, but each one of them has their own little they have their own accents. You have some that are more similar to others based on the amount of, say, South Asian people who traveled to the Caribbean, or the different African dialects and so on and so forth. I mean, within Jamaica alone, there's 14 parishes, and there's probably twice or three times as many different kinds of Jamaican accents. Like, there are times when I was living in Jamaica, I wouldn't be able to understand somebody who came from deep rural Hanover, you know, because they speak with a different accent. Or I would go to a kampong, which is a small kind of self-governed, I want to say, town or village within Jamaica, and their language sounds different, you know, and they also have a traditional language that the Maroons spoke that you can't understand if you're not from there, you know.
True.
So there's code switching, there is ingredient switching, there is all kinds of things in order to keep the culture alive in different ways in the quote unquote new place that people are living in.
And think about the music right now. Every parish probably takes music differently, right? Yeah. It's like soca music. Soca, like you know, from an outsider, right? Some people might like intersect soca with like calypso. But if I'm not mistaken, there is a slight difference, right? And it's like the whole dancehall versus reggae debate, right? Where like dancehall, some people don't consider dancehall as a true subset of reggae, but like, you know, there's some people that believe that reggae is dancehall, but that's not the case, because dancehall is a subset that like sort of branch off its own. You know, like some people, there is a big debate that a lot of dancehall should be its own category.
Right. But then also that hip-hop is originally from dancehall and reggae music. That's where hip-hop has its origins. A lot of people don't know that.
But then you also have the blues and R&B samples. And then now you have the EDM influence and this and that. Or where EDM is influenced by rap. So it's very interesting.
Yeah.
This is quite a tangent that we have sort of run away on, based on Kofi remixing code to create different patterns. Yes, we are talking to Kofi Oduro, who is a creative coder. His normal shows that he had prior to COVID, he would take inspiration from the audience and sort of remix the conversation or the flow of his performance based on what people were saying, which is technically what just happened right here in this interview. I don't know how we started started at remixing using Hydra to make images into new images that sort of look like Kente fabric, and ended up in Jamaica and talking about food and other things that we remix. But then when I think of it, energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can just change form. So it's sort of what you have been doing with your work. You're not a visual, you're not an artist that paints or one that draws, but you use these images in such a way with coding to create some beautiful pieces of art. And if you check him out on Instagram, you could see Illis Preacher, and you could spell it.
Yeah, so it's Illis, Illest Preacha. And also for the link before, for the Cut the Tear the Remix, is at museum.mcmaster.ca exhibitions. You can probably type in McMaster Museum Exhibitions and get to the page.
And take in this the virtual experience and see Kofi's remixed room with the Kente fabric, with the code on the walls. And as you go from room to room, you'll also hear the music that Kofi has coded by taking the colors and making them into numbers. And yes, to leave that simply put. And you can check out your album as well, which is
Colorscape Hues into Groove. So I pun them like there, right? Hues, like, you know, hues are different shades. So take that color and make it into grooves. And I am trying to make a second one soon, y'all. So it will be great.
So we are going to take a break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
In Quebec, vaccination against COVID-19 is underway, but not everybody is protected yet. Even if you've been vaccinated, you still need to respect basic health measures, like wearing a mask, maintaining social distancing, and washing your hands regularly. You must also get tested if you have symptoms and follow self-isolation guidelines. Find out about the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Follow all the health guidelines, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec. Thank you.
Darling, I care for you more than my own self. Darling, I share with you all goodness and wealth. Said we can have just one night, or we can have one whole life if we play it cool. Yeah, we can have that one thing, or we can have everything if our hearts are true. Girl, slow down. Girl, let me love you. Darling, slow down. Let me get to know you.
Baby, I've been fantasizing, just looking in your eyes. You know I'm looking for more, and you're what I've been praying for. This kind of love don't come around like this. I'm not one to play around like this. It's so real, and I love how it feels. I love it when we slowly sway. I love it.